The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hey, DC.
What's going on, brother?
I just got your message now. I actually didn't see it until after I already pinged you. So you're okay to do this?
Yeah, I'm good. I get kind of multitasking. I'm doing some edits and stuff on some solo material. I got a session starting at 7. I got a sax player coming in at 7. Yeah, it's gonna be something new. A little bit of horns on some solo material. So.
Oh, cool.
Give it that Toto feel, you know.
So you're actually doing your second solo album after all these years, huh?
For all these years, man. Finally.
Wow.
It's exciting. It just, you know, life got in the way and other projects and bands and all that stuff, and it got pushed to the side where, you know, now that Royal Hunt's going strong, I decided to really put a big effort forth on this, and it's turning out so far. I mean, I'm only doing just like the demo stuff, and I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled. It's taken on a life that I've never even expected.
Looking forward to it. So, I mean, you're only like a state over, but how's everything out there in PA?
It's good. Yeah, Pittsburgh's good, you know, other than the Steelers sucking, but, you know.
I won't go there.
we got the Penguins to look forward to it, so.
Right. All right, so if you're ready to roll, we can get going.
Yeah, man, that sounds good.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema and music. Tonight, DC Cooper of Royal Hunt and Silent Force on the Pop Online Network. Cinema, your source for music and film that matter. Cult, underground, independent, and generally falling outside the mainstream corporate boardroom paint-by-numbers bullshit. Tonight, we speak with yet another Golden Voice metal frontman. With his syrupy smooth tones gracing the better part of the discography of no less than two major players in the European power metal scene, he was a founding member of both Alex Byrott's Silent Force and Andre Andersen's symphonically oriented Royal Hunt. Lending a smooth and clean veneer to many a recording over the past 20 years, this man also proves to be unusually introspective and civic-minded, serving for many years as both volunteer firefighter and EMS tech in his East Coast hometown, in addition to his European touring and recording duties. Recently reunited with his former bandmates in Royal Hunt, at the behest of both fans and fellow musicians. Join us as we speak with one of the premier vocalists in metal, the one and only DC Cooper. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's the man himself to tell you all about it.
Hi, this is DC Cooper from Royal Hunt, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema, and this is A Life to Die For.
Whoops. No, you didn't say that.
Yes.
Hi, this is DC Cooper from Royal Hunt, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema, and this is Hell Comes Down from Heaven.
eyes, but why? Yet another day is passing by. Oh my.
listening to Third Eye Cinema with a special guest tonight, DC Cooper.
Stay tuned.
Primal Fear and Rock Meets Classic, and you guys are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Wow.
You may have to grab most of them in there.
All right.
Hi, this is Alex Taropoli from Rhapsody of Fire, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy.
Okay, hi there, this is George and Thomas from Serenity, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema Show together with Team.
That's right.
Should we do it one more time? Okay. So, hi there, this is Georg and Thomas from Serenity, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, everyone, this is Mark Bowles from Ring of Fire. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey there, this is Marcos from Uproos, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy it.
Hi, here's Matt Sinner of Primal Fear and Sinner, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, everybody out there. This is Micah Kiska speaking, singing for Unisonic in Plasma Dome, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, this is Homer Simpson. Why don't you do yourself a favor and check out the new Eden Spirit album, Stroke Symphony. I love it, especially for the giveaway free donuts!
I'll do your normal one if you want.
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, this is Paul Logue from the band Eden's Curse, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep rocking. Stay cursed.
Tonight, we're talking metal, and we have with us a man whose smooth tones have graced the better part of the discography of two major players in the European power metal scene, a founding member of both Alex Byrath's Silent Force and Andre Andersen's symphonically oriented Royal Hunt. He's lent a smooth and clean veneer to many a recording over the past 20 years, even putting out a solo album and taking part in a rock opera project with both Sabine Adelsbacher of Edenbridge and David Redmond of Voodoo Circle and Pink Cream 69 along the way. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming one of the premier vocalists in metal, Mr. D.C. Cooper. D.C., hey. Welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
All right, man. Thank you so much. You're way, way, way too kind. You know that, don't you? Hey, thank you. I like the, how did you say that? The smooth veneer. I've never heard that before, but I like that. That's kind of cool.
May I say, you certainly have a history behind you. One thing that's interesting to me that a lot of listeners may not be aware of is that in between all your work fronting some of the best-loved bands in the European power metal scene is that you're actually also a volunteer fireman in your hometown. How does that work out for you schedule-wise?
I'm a volunteer fireman, but I was working full-time for almost 9 years as a full-time paramedic. I would take 2 24-hour shifts a week. And my life's taken a huge change over the past 2 years, and that was one of the things that I did change about my life is I actually walked away from emergency medicine. I did emergency medicine for about 15 years all total.
Wow.
And it just got the better of me. You know, that's the best way to put it. It was just too much. I'm too much of a sensitive person or feeling person that I couldn't see that stuff anymore. It was really, really ruining me and my relationship with my kids, my family, and all that stuff. So, you know, about 5 weeks after I walked off the job practically, my then 10-year-old son, he had walked over and sat down beside me, put his arm around me and said, "Dad, it's good to see you smile again." You know, that really hit me hard, where I made the right decision because my life has really changed since then. And, you know, I try to show my sons to be part of the community, to help other people. And, you know, the fact that I was doing firefighting, it's, extremely exciting. You know, I'm an adrenaline junkie. That was one of the big factors in it. But one of the biggest things was I needed to give back somehow because, you know, as musicians, we have a tendency to be very self-centered. And, you know, it's all about me, you know, where I was kind of finding that out. And at an early age, I was a medic and I got away from it because I was, you know, my full-time musician. And I... Beginning, well, it was right after, actually, September 11th, basically, is whenever I got back into it, because I needed to be part of something bigger.
Right.
And it really, I mean, I miss it almost every day. I miss helping people. But I still, from time to time, I'm not so much, because of my schedule, it's hard to stay up with, you know, firefighting. And but I still have all my certifications, all my training, you know, advanced rescue technician, all that stuff. And I always have that, and I always try to make sure that my certs stay up to snuff. But, yeah, it was, you know, there had been numerous times where I was in a recording studio here. I have my studio built onto my house, and where I'd be recording something, I'd get a call and I'd take off, you know. But the 24-hour shifts as a paramedic was really tough, just because it takes a lot out of you.
Right.
And the really good thing about it was then, you know, I was able to work a full-time job and have a job like that, but also I would have 5 days off then. So that was a good thing, but like I said, right now, I'm better for it right now, and who knows, I might get back into emergency medicine again, but there's nothing like going into a burning house and putting out a fire.
And, you know, I can certainly see how that will wear on you. That was part of the reason I was amazed by this in the first place. But even so, I mean, it's pretty unique, not to mention civic-minded, for a prominent touring metal musician to be doing something like that when you're in town. So, you know, I just want to say I'm impressed and all respect for that.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I have the utmost respect for EMS people, firefighters, and police, you know, because being on that side of it is... You see stuff that, you know, I mean, I saw stuff that nobody really should see. And,
right.
But they do every day. And, you know, to be part of that for such a long time was, you know, was definitely life changing, but I carried it on my shoulders too much. People who are able to do it without carrying on their shoulders so much, I have the utmost respect for. But, you know, like I said, it was just something that I needed to do because I needed to give back. It became with the music where it was just so over-consuming that it became, you know, so self-centered, and I just knew that I needed to do something else that was bigger than myself. And,
yeah.
You know, like I said, I've changed and I've learned through a lot of it, so...
Yeah, and a lot of what you're talking about is just part and parcel of being an artist of any kind. You know, you kind of got to pull out of yourself to make something worthwhile, and therefore, like I said, it becomes kind of self-centered sometimes. So.
Sure. It's almost impossible, and I'm not saying that in a conceited way or saying musicians are conceited.
No.
I mean, you have that factor in any aspect of life with any personality, you know, but we spend so much time working hard at honing our skill and being the best that we possibly can be because there's so much competition out there. You have to. That's why I'm amazed at bands, and don't take this the wrong way, you know, I'm amazed at bands that just can go out there and they make good noise that people really buy and love, that you go like, man, you know, what is that? But we won't go there.
Right. So as most people are already aware, your first international claim to fame was being one of the finalists when Judas Priest was trying to find a new singer in the early 90s. And I'd seen Ripper Owens when he was still touring around with his Priest cover band Stained Glass, and obviously his strengths leaned more towards the Painkiller sound than the sort of smooth early Priest feel that you'd have brought to the band. So it's not exactly an apples-to-apples thing there.
Yeah, the funny part about Tim was he was from Akron, Ohio, and I'm from Pittsburgh. So we had actually, my old band here in Pittsburgh, the Tongue Bandits, we used to travel out there and Akron Agora, which is used to be a huge venue. We would open up for each other, you know, and they would come to Pittsburgh and open up for us. So we were trying to help each other. We were trying to bring them into the Pittsburgh market, and they were trying to help us venture further west.
Right.
And I can remember we had done sound check, and I went in the backstage area and was putzing around for a while and went to get something to eat or whatever, and then I walked back in the backstage area, and I thought it was the sound guy, like, running a Priest CD.
Right.
He was just boom. It was on the money, absolutely on the money, that I walked out. My mouth was probably dragging on the floor going like, holy, you know, man, he sounds exactly like him, you know, whenever he needs to. And so, I mean, for me, you know, that was a huge honor. Everybody says I'm absolutely lying through my teeth whenever I say this, but this is with complete truth. I really didn't want to be in the band. I wanted to see how far I could go. Fernando Cortright was my manager from CMI Management, and he was shopping my Pittsburgh band. We were going up to New York City at least once a month, up there, meetings and this and that, doing whatever we could to try to get a deal. And it got to a certain point then where he's like, look, you know, you guys are kind of dated, and that's whenever Green Day and Nirvana and all those bands were taken off.
Right.
And he had approached me and said, you know, would you mind if I start shopping you, because I think I can get you a gig overseas. And I told him, sure, let's see. And I didn't really think much about it. And then he started calling me with different bands from overseas, saying they would like my demo and all that.
Right.
And he's like, he calls me one day. He's like, yeah, he says, there's this other band. They're a pretty big name. He says, you know, they're really interested in your stuff. Can you cut any more tracks for me? And I told him, yeah, well, who's the band? He's like, yeah, this band called Judas Priest. You know? I was like, I about fell off the chair. You know, I'm like, are you serious? You know, because I mean, I just like all of us, we grew up on them.
Right.
So it got down the wire, and you know, and they wanted more stuff, and started sending videos and all that stuff, and you know, it ended up being there was four of us in the finals, and none of the four were picked because all of a sudden, boom, Tim come out of nowhere. They just got a demo tape, or they got a videotape, I think, of him. And said, that's who we want. And in fact, I was on tour with Royal Hunt at the time because it was a long, long process. That process took probably a year and a half to 2 years.
Wow.
And in the meantime, I had hooked up with Royal Hunt, and we were on tour in Japan, and I got a fax from my wife. She had sent the fax from Jane Andrews, their management company, saying, sorry, we really appreciate your involvement and everything like that, but we picked Tim Ripper Owens. I'm like, Tim Owens, who do I, man, why do I know that name? And then it hit me. I'm like, oh, my God, it's the kid from Akron, Ohio. So to me, I thought he was the perfect fit. And whenever I said, I probably wouldn't have accepted the gig with them anyhow, because Royal Hunt was going strong already at the time when I joined. And it was getting better and better every week that we were out on the road. And to me, I had felt deep in my heart that Rob Halford would never stay away from Judas Priest. And as it turned out, he didn't. So I figured it was only going to be worth one album and one world tour. And what I think they did two albums and two tours, and then he came back. And, you know, whenever I heard Jugulator come out, you know, I had since met and talked with KK Downing and Glenn Tipton. We've seen each other a couple times. And, you know, they told me, man, you were really a strong runner, and we were really looking at you and stuff. But, you know, we picked, and, you know, Ripper. And I said, no, that's absolutely. But I couldn't have seen myself doing Jugulator.
Right.
And they said, though, they would have written the album completely different had I been picked. So
that's what I was trying to get at, because it's like a very different approach you would have brought to the band as opposed to what he brought. So, like,
yeah.
I said, it's not apples to apples. It's kind of apples and oranges.
Yeah, it was really dark. I was really surprised. I mean, I liked the album a lot, but it was way darker than I think anything they had ever done.
Right.
And I'm not sure where that approach or how that all came about, because I didn't think that was in Tim's personality either. You know, I didn't know him that well, but that's what they came up with. So, you know, I hope he's doing fine too these days.
Yeah. So speaking of where we were going there anyway, you got in on the ground floor of Royal Hunt, being with them right from the start, at least in terms of album releases. And I understand that you had several offers at the time. So what was it about Royal Hunt that drew you to that band in particular?
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that question. That's a good one. My wife just had walked in, and she's answering for me. That's true, though. It was the opportunity because, I mean, literally, I had made my decision. I think it was Thanksgiving. Sent off my tape, and they had contacted me Thanksgiving Day, I think, and said, yeah, you're in the band, and you're going to leave in a month. And I left Christmas Day, you know, literally a month later. I left Christmas Day, did 13 rehearsals, and then I was in front of almost 5,000 people for my first concert in Tokyo, Japan. So, yeah, that was the big thing. They were tried and true. They had, what, two or three albums before I come on board, and they had very good success, especially in Japan. And something didn't work out with Henrik or whatever, but I brought a complete different flavor and color with my vocals compared to Henrik's. And, you know, things went from there. So, yeah, that's best way to answer that. That was opportunity was right there. It was knocking, so I had to open the door.
The band has an interesting sound in that while it's very clearly power metal with a strong melodic underpinning, there's a rather strong overlaying of symphonic touches involved, particularly with respect to the last two albums.
Oh,
it almost makes it hard to classify.
The last album especially, yeah. Really, I mean, this is the first time that he used a real string section for an album, and I'm really, really, really happy about that, because I'm hoping... I haven't been able to talk to him about it, but I think I had a big influence in that, because at the end of the last tour, the last time we were together, we had quite a few conversations, because I really, one of my dreams is to be on stage with a symphony orchestra.
Right.
And I told him, I'm like, man, I said, this music lends itself so well that it's already written. You know, all you have to do is chart the parts out for everybody, and we could go and actually do this. And so we've been toying around with the idea. We talked about it. And now, once we're on the road, I'm really going to hammer on Andre to make a decision and try to put this together. I mean, it would be an absolutely huge undertaking. But if we chose, I don't know, 5 or 6 cities in the world, you know, places like Frankfurt, Rome, obviously Tokyo, you know, where we picked some of the strongest big cities in the world, and we did 5 or 6 concerts with the symphony orchestra, it would be absolutely perfect. To me, it would be a dream come true. That's just something I've always wanted to do. So, yeah, all this material lends itself well to play with a symphony, so it's very symphonic.
Your vocals are extremely clean, much akin to Tony Kakko from Sonata Arctica. There's a touch of Michael Kiske even, but you tend to keep things more mid-range than that would imply. In today's musical arena, that in itself marks you as somewhat rarefied, if not unique. You know, there's so many growlers and shriekers and raspy voices out there, and you come in and you're just, like, smooth like butter, so.
Thanks. I mean, I've worked hard on my vocals. You know, I took 5 years of opera training and really worked hard on the high range, because whenever I'm singing the high stuff, I'm singing the stuff. I'm not screaming it, you know.
Right.
If you hear me screaming a high note, I'm screaming it on purpose. And that actually wreaks havoc on my voice, because it's just not suited to do that. On the new album, you'll hear me get a little bit more theatrical, like I had kind of done on Mr. Mercuria and Amaranth Plate. I used a wider flavor of theatrics with my vocals. And I did definitely use that, especially on A Life to Die For. I mean, I think it's the first recording of anything I've done. There's a midsection, like the breakdown part. You can hear the symphony orchestra and stuff playing in the background. And I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do there. For some reason, I just opened up my mouth and this opera voice came out. And now it's kind of opened up a few new doors, because I'm going to start using a little bit more. I mean, that's what I was trained in, and that's one of my strong points. But I just truly believe in, like, really trying to sing as clear as you possibly can. And, you know, I envy people, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people, they only have, like, a fairly limited range, but people who use that range and they use it well, I envy. And I really, really listen closely to them, to how they use it. There's some very good friends of mine from Australia, a band called Voyager. If you've never heard of them before, check them out, because I keep plugging away at them. We do 2 shows in Australia this tour coming up, and we're hoping they're going to open up for us. So Danny Estrin, the singer for Voyager, he's got a very limited range, and he's one of the very first people to admit it. He uses it so unbelievably well. It was the first band that I'd ever heard. Somebody sent me their demo, or somebody sent me a song or a video or something like that, and I sat there and I was in awe of him. And it's the first band that I ever sought after to sing on their next album. I'm like, you and I's voice, we have to work together. And we did on the latest album, and the album's called I Think Meaning of I. And it turned out fantastic. It's one of my favorite songs that I ever worked on, and he sings the leads and I sing my counterparts. He's a great example of using a very limited range, you know. So there's so many different types and styles of singer that if they do it well and they really work at it, they're going to continue to succeed.
So let's talk a little history. You were with Royal Hunt throughout the mid to late 90s, and then what happened?
Oh, you want to go there? You know what happened.
Well, you know what I mean.
I mean, you know, both Andre and I, we've done very good on not airing the dirty laundry. You know, how many years? You know, that's why it made this reunion work. It's not my style, and I don't think it's Andre's either to go out there and trash. You know, I mean, there's still things that him and I need to sit down, drink a bottle of Jack Daniels, and work it out, because, you know, let's just say the negotiating deal fell through.
Gotcha.
My contract was up at the time, and we were negotiating my new contract because I wanted to be a hired gun, and just because of certain reasons, you know, it didn't work out. So I'm a firm believer in not forgetting the past, but learning from the past and,
right,
you know, and not dwelling on it. And if I was to dwell on it, then, you know, we would have never got back together. So
gotcha.
It was a nasty breakup, you know, but that stuff happens in the music industry. And
oh, yeah.
the good part about it is, you know, I
together.
Forced and I did, I got, I don't know how many, I mean, I got 36 albums under my belt, and the new solo album that I'm working on and another project will be 37 and 38. So
right.
I've had the opportunity over the years to work with so many different great musicians and producers, and it's been quite a ride.
So from there, you put together a solo record, and almost immediately thereafter, there you are with Alex Byrod on the ground floor of yet another huge band on the scene, which is Silent Force. How much of a change was that for you?
Coming out of the solo or coming out of Royal Hunt?
I'm thinking coming out of Royal Hunt, because the two bands are pretty different.
Yeah, I mean, the solo stuff was more suited. That was me. You know, that was more my style and what I like. The new solo album is going to have a little bit more like of a Toto flavor to it that's a little bit more, I guess, call it mature.
Right.
The first one was a little bit more metal heavy, I guess, you know. And I mean, I'm the bottom line is that I'm maturing, you know.
Hey, we all are.
Yeah, you know, we all are. So you have to kind of adapt. You're only as good as your last release. And as a musician, this is my philosophy that you have to keep yourself open to working with new people, working on new ideas, and forever changing yourself because, you know, musicians who stay in the same vein are going to kind of get lost.
Right.
And be stuck in the particular thing and go like, oh, man, I should have tried this or tried that, you know. But hey, in the answer to your question, it was a huge change because, you know, we're starting from the ground floor again, which kind of really bothered me at first, you know, because it was, you know, it's a ton of work. I mean, the music industry, period, writing and recording is a crap ton of work. It's not all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll and all that stuff. There's
right.
That has very little to do with it. So we were starting from the ground floor, but I had a great team of people together with Silent Force. Alex was a great, you know, he ended up being like a brother to me. And from the very first day, we got along really well. You know, the music was already written on Empire of Future, and I had to, you know, they brought me on board to basically write the lyrics and the vocals.
Right.
And it was, that was kind of, basically, that was a test album. It was almost supposed to only be a project.
Right.
And it turned out, you know, what, we did four albums after all, and... You know, that was a good part of my life. It was definitely not anywhere near the caliber or the level as Royal Hunt toured on or anything like that, you know, but a great bunch of guys, great musicians, a shit ton of fun to be with, sometimes a little bit too much fun, you know. We did a lot of touring together, too, and we did a ton of touring, opening for Angra, Stradivarius, Udo, you know,
right.
we did a lot of touring. It was a big change, but, you know, it was getting back to more my roots of being a metalhead. And it was pretty difficult, especially the last two albums. Like, you know, the last album was one of my favorites, which was Walk the Earth. And that, you know, was still very metal-oriented, but it was very symphonic. It got more into the symphony side of things and chore. And we use that word a lot, especially with that album.
You know, you were with Silent Force throughout the millennium, from Empire of Future through Walk to the Earth, until, from what I gather, Alex got involved in any number of other projects like Stinner and Primal Fear. But was that the only thing that put the band on hiatus for a good 5 years, or was there something else that basically stopped everything dead?
Wow. Let me see how I can politically correct answer this. A lot of it had to do with me, and I will take a good brunt of that, where we hit this plateau. And we stayed there. From the third album on, we stayed there. And anything we did, any tour that we did, we just could not achieve anything better. And we had a bad run of bad luck that cost us a lot of money. So there was a certain point in time where we got ourselves way in the hole. And, you know, to be an operating business, that's constantly up against the wall like that is very difficult. I mean, it's hard enough in the music business as it is. That there was too many factors, and then we just, I mean, you know, he got involved in a lot of different stuff. I kind of took a hiatus from the music industry for a couple of years in a way because I was just so distraught over the whole thing. Just
right.
Losing money on downloads, record companies, publishing, you name it. It was just to the point where I was so disillusioned that I was really close to quitting, actually, to be honest with you. I was ready to make an announcement and just retire.
Couch.
You know, because I love my family, my sons, you know, they're the world to me, and I was heavily into emergency medicine at the time, so
right.
I was, you know, putting a lot of time in there, and I kind of got out of it there for quite a while, and, you know, the phone call that I got from Andre to get back together pretty much came at the right time. he had tried contacting me in early 2010, and we couldn't come to any kind of arrangement that was going to work for either one of us. So we left it alone, and then about a year later, he called me again and says, all right, let's talk about this again. He says, but make a decision as a business decision. Try to remove all personal problems that we had. He said, just kind of forget about that for a second. And I did, and here we are.
So while you were still with Silent Force, you also took part in and wrote the effective libretto for a rock opera project called Mr. Mercuria, where you worked with Alex and his future Buddha Circle bandmate David Redman, but also interestingly the lovely Sabine Edelsbacher of Edenbridge. So how did that come about?
Well, that's a long story, but Reader's Digest version, there was a writer, she wrote the story, and to be honest with you, she actually had come into, I think she had like an aunt to die or something like that, and she came into a big old ton of money. I mean, it's not, you know, I would have probably spent a portion of it, but she spent the entire amount on putting this project together.
Wow.
And which, to me, I mean, I love the album. I thought, you know, I had never written, I think at that time, I had never written for anybody else. And so I was writing for, what, 6 or 7 different singers.
Right.
And it was quite a challenge to do, but I took her story and adapted it into lyrics. And it ended up being, to me, a great project, but it was completely just shoved underneath the carpet. You know, I mean, that one and the same thing with, like, Amron's Play, for some reason, it just didn't trip anybody's triggers. You know, I don't know if it was the record company or the promoters or whatever, but it didn't get far, you know. So it's kind of like those, what's the right word, you know, albums that I felt a lot stronger about than what had happened with it. You know, there's actually talks about re-releasing Amron's Play with a couple acoustic tracks out there again, because that one fell way, way, way short, and that was due to some bad management and business. And
right.
I think it was no fault of the album itself. Mr. McCrory was kind of the same thing, but that one ended up in a train wreck at the very end, having to do with, you know, some of the people involved. And but working with Sabina, you know, I ended up singing that on their album.
Right.
You know, and working with the guys from Vandam Plus, and I, David Reedman, I mean, him and I are best of friends. I love him dearly. His voice is one of my favorite voices in all of rock.
Right.
He's just got such, just the greatest tone of his voice, and he can hit the highs and the lows and all that stuff, you know, and he's a good performer, and it was great working with him, you know, and then, of course, the big one was Dennis Ward was involved, and anytime Dennis Ward is involved.
Right.
I'll be there in a heartbeat. I'll take a pay cut to work with him, because him and I have been involved in a couple of really good albums, and we have a blast. We just have an absolute blast working together. He's an absolute master as a producer.
So you sort of touched on this, but in 2011, after several years of effective silence, you were back together with Royal Hunt for Show Me How to Live, which, as I mentioned, seemed a lot more bombastic and packed with dramatic orchestration than the earlier material. And obviously they'd had a few other singers while you were with Silent Force, including Yngwie vocalist Mark Bowles. So what brought you and Andre back together after a good decade?
Well, like I was saying before, you know, he contacted me in early 2010, and we couldn't come to terms at that point in time, and kind of left it alone for a while, and then he contacted me a little less than a year later and said, you know, let's make a business decision. And he didn't say it, but in so many words, Royal Hunt, and this is nothing against Mark or, oh, he's going to kill me, I wonder what, John West, I'm sorry. You know, this is nothing against them, but Royal Hunt status was not the same without me, and I was not the same without them. And that was kind of the, you know, the one thing that me and Andre had agreed upon in so many words. And, you know, he had said, you know, try to make a decision without feelings involved. And so I says, I'll tell you what, like right off the bat, him and the management, they wanted me to sign like a 3-album deal and blah, blah, blah. And I said, absolutely not. He said, how about we go out on the road and see what happens? So they put together a small tour. We only did, 3 or 4 shows in Russia and 3 shows, I think, in Japan. And I said, let's go out and do a tour and just see what happens. I said, we might go out on the road and end up killing each other, and everybody gets on an airplane and goes home halfway through.
Right.
But it was completely the opposite. It was so fantastic. I can't, you know, I get kind of charged just even talking about it, because I can remember the first rehearsal. Alan Sorensen, the drummer that I had worked with, he was still there. Maria McTurk, she was one of the original Royal Hunt sweethearts from the very beginning, and her and I are best friends. She was there, you know, Andre being there and myself, you know, we were in the practice room and stuff, and we started playing, and it was like in the middle of the second or third song we were rehearsing, everybody just stopped And I don't know, for a second, I think everybody got teary-eyed. You know, we all looked at each other and was like, wow, this is exactly what it was 13 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, this feels exactly the same, except we're just older and fatter now. That's all, you know. And from that point on, it felt great. We went out on the road. I mean, we had, that was the greatest tour in the world for me because there was no stress. We didn't have an album to promote. We didn't have to prove anything to anybody. We were out there basically just to see if we were going to get along. And the tour just turned out incredibly great, and we had a blast. And the response from the fans was through the roof. I mean, seeing, you know, having people, and this is more than 20 or 30 people come up to us with tears in their eyes, shaking my hand, going like, I never thought I would see this day. I never thought I would see Royal Hunt and DC Cooper back together again live on stage. Thank you for coming. And I'm going like, no, thank you. You know, thank you for coming. You know, I can't believe that you guys are still interested. And so that showed us that there was something that was still out there.
Right.
And, you know, come back off the tour, I don't know, a couple of weeks or so after the tour was over, Andre called me and says, well, what do you think? And I says, well, let's talk. So we hammered out a deal, but I made it very clear from the very beginning, and they all agreed that we're going to do this one thing at a time. We're going to do this one tour at a time, one album at a time, because I live in the now. I live in the moment. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Right.
So let's see what happens today. And, you know, this tour that's coming up, if everything goes well, then once it's over, we'll talk about the next album. And that's how we're doing everything, because things can change in a heartbeat. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in basically living in the moment, because I let so many years go by out of my life that I want to try to make sure that I enjoy everything that I can right now.
I hear that.
No, I'm not saying that I don't think about the future. I do. My wife will definitely attest to that. She gets mad at me because I don't think enough in the future. But I'm a firm believer in basically living now.
Right. And, you know, what's interesting about the European metal scene of late, particularly in terms of the melodic power metal genre, is that many bands that have been around for a decade or more are just now hitting their high points, putting out albums that put much of the earlier material to shame. And I'm not sure if it's just accumulative musical experience or improved production technique, but we're just hitting one after the other of late, which really stand out not only from the rest of the scene today, but even against the earlier releases from the same band. And I definitely hazard a place that Life to Die For among those.
What's the one word I used earlier? Maturity. You know, I think, you know, whenever you're speaking of those bands, and I can think of two or three right off the top of my head that fits exactly what you're explaining. As musicians, as people, as human beings, we're learning. We're learning through mistakes. We're learning what to use to our advantage. And we're learning what people do like, what they don't like, and learning stuff about ourselves. So those bands that are taking a while to take off, more power to them, and God bless them, because, you know, I hope they stay with it, because there's more to come, you know, and it just gets better, just like fine wine.
That's it. So any upcoming tour info, or do you want to point your listeners to your website or Facebook page?
Sure. Anybody can get a hold of me on Facebook. You know, it's just look up DC Cooper in Pittsburgh, and there's royalhunt.com. And let me see what else. The tour that's coming up so far right now, we have not so far. This is definitely going to be it, because I had to put the stop on, because they would have kept scheduling. 17 countries, I think, scheduled right now.
Wow.
And I leave the 18th of February, and I don't think I come back until mid-April. And I don't like to be away from my family for that long of time. So, because my sons are 11 and 9, and I like being around them, you know,
right,
and part of their life. So for me, it's very important to, you know, not to go too long. Usually for quite a long time there, I was doing like a month on, and I would come home for 3 or 4 months and go back out for a month. And because I don't like to be away for a long stretch of time, but this one's going to be close to 2 months in 17 countries. And I'm hoping everybody has a blast. You know, we're going to China for the first time, Taiwan's for the first time, Australia for the first time. And I'm looking forward to seeing these new places. And I'm a huge fan of meeting people, enjoying their culture as much as possible, which is hard whenever you're on the road, because it's very difficult. Most of the stuff we see is out of a plane window or a tour bus window or something. But I always try to make time to spend at least an hour in each city that I'm in, just walking around and having a cup of coffee and talking to people or whatever, at least being able to talk to the fans. So the one other thing that I can add as far as websites, keep an eye out because dccooper.com will be up and running very, very soon. Been working really hard on kind of perfecting the website, but it's a little bit too late right now. I wanted to get it released before the holidays, and things got a little bit too crazy, and there's no sense right now in launching the website before I leave on tour because I can't keep an eye on it while I'm on the road. So
Right. Sometime
hopefully in mid-April to beginning of May, dccooper.com will be up and running, and there'll be everything from demo downloads to t-shirts to some of my own photography work I'm going to be selling online, and just to get out there. The internet, the social media aspect of things is a huge tool for bands to keep their fans informed, and I want to try to take advantage of that with the new solo album.
Well, with that, DC, I'd like to thank you again for joining me here on Third Eye Cinema, and we hope to have you back again to discuss your next album or project.
All right, man. It was great talking to you. Appreciate it.
All right. So I appreciate it. And like I said, you know, when your next, whatever it is, if it's Royal Hunt or if it's your solo album or whatever, love to have you back on.
Excellent, brother.
Much appreciated.
Thanks, man.
All the best.
All right. You too. Bye.
Bye. And to close out our interview with DC, here's the man himself to introduce it.
Hi, this is DC Cooper from Royal Hunt, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema, and this is A Bullet's Tale.
Now you're trying so hard to deceive me, whether you do believe me, you can run but you'll never leave.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoy our interview with D.C. Cooper. In the future on Third Eye Cinema, death metal virtuoso James Murphy, new director's roundtable, and on Baltimore and Bridge. Stay tuned. Contact us here, comments, suggestions, or a filmmaker, musician would like to join us on air. Email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. If you missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. And in March...
This is Lambal from Edenbridge, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.